How many here have not attended any of the prior sessions of this Nectar of Instruction? Okay. And you too? You have. But you haven't. Because she'll tell you everything that she knows, so you'll be smart. But I'll tell you a few things in addition, okay? A little background. Do you know who is Lord Chaitanya? Really? How long ago did Lord Chaitanya appear? 500 years ago? 500 years ago. So around the time that Christopher Columbus was in a boat trying to see if the world was flat or round. You know that history? Around the same time, Lord Chaitanya appeared in India. And you know who is Krishna, right? Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, along with his brother Balaram. And they were the son of Nanda and Jasoda, and at least the mother of Balaram was Rohini. Rohini was one of the wives of Vasudeva, like Devaki was a wife of Vasudeva, and Rohini was one of the wives of Vasudeva. And so Vasudeva is the father of both Krishna and Balaram. Krishna was born as the son of Devaki, and Balaram was born as the son of Rohini. They're co-wives of one great personality, Vasudeva. So when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, he, like he said he would do in Bhagavad Gita, he accomplishes three things. Famous verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4. Three things. Pritranaya sadhunam, he gives protection to the devotees. Krishna gives protection to the devotees. Vinashaya chaduskritam, he diminishes the influence of the wicked people on the planet. And he reestablishes principles of religion, dharma. Dharma sangsthapanartaya. Sambhavami yuge, from time to time, from age to age, different ages of mankind, Krishna appears and does that. So after Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, he came to teach how to do the last instruction that he teaches in Bhagavad Gita. The last instruction Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami ma suchaha. Krishna's last instruction in Bhagavad Gita is, all varieties of dharma are subordinate to this one principle, which is surrender to me. And one who surrenders to Krishna, he says in that verse, he relieves them of all sinful reactions. And in case you have some doubt, don't doubt. Have no fear. Ma suchaha. So Krishna taught that in Bhagavad Gita. And in the next yuga, Krishna appeared in what's known as Dwarapa Yuga. In the next yuga, Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya. As Lord Chaitanya. He's Krishna himself teaching how to surrender unto Krishna. How to surrender unto Krishna. And the most effective means by the performance of the Yuga Dharma. It's called the Yuga Avatar. Avatar, that was a movie, right? But it's a Sanskrit word. It means not just a movie. It's one who descends, that's the meaning. One who descends from the spiritual to the material realm for a purpose. And the purpose of Lord Chaitanya was to deliver the Yuga Dharma. So he's the Yuga Avatar. And Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy name, just as we were doing, chanting the holy name of Krishna and Rama. That's the Yuga Dharma. It's the primary means for achieving spiritual perfection. And along with the chanting of the holy name, Lord Chaitanya gave teachings on how to perform bhakti in such a way that you can most effectively surrender to the holy name and achieve perfection. In this one short lifetime, one can achieve spiritual perfection by following these teachings and along with chanting. Because teachings are very important. Teachings, it's not just theory. It's how you live your life. Let's do this one. A train, now they have monorails, but normal trains are two rails, right? Two tracks of a train. And if you only have one track of the train and not the other one, the train isn't going to go very far. Correct? Similarly, for spiritual advancement, you need two things. That which is going to purify the heart, that's chanting Hare Krishna mantra, or names of God. Then the second is that which will give direction to your life, so that as your heart becomes purified, you know how to live your life. How to eat, how to work, how to walk, how to have social activity, how to have family, how to everything in such a way that makes it most ideal, most in the mode of goodness, way of life, theistic life, side by side with that which purifies the heart. How to lead our life while our heart is becoming purified. Both things are needed. So Lord Chaitanya gave teachings. And he did it in a very unique way. He didn't write them. He taught them to Rupa Goswami and others, but especially Rupa Goswami, and empowered him, this is now Krishna, in the form of one who's teaching how to surrender him, empowering Rupa Goswami to the fullest extent to understand, realize, and to encode all these teachings within written literature. So Rupa Goswami was up there. Very special personality. Very special. And he wrote a number of books, and one of them is a very short one. It's only 11 verses. So that means it's capsulized. Like a sutra. Like really packed. Like a snowball. You don't get much snow here in St. Louis, do you? You know what snowball is though, right? You know what a giwik is? You ever make giwiks? You know when you offer a lamp, you offer incense, and then you offer a lamp. Like a Diwali. You light lamps, right? Yes? Sometimes. Okay. You know what a candle is. A giwik is like a candle. It's like made of cotton, and you just like tighten it and tighten it, put it in some ghee, and tighten it and tighten it, put it in some ghee, and keep making it really tight, and it serves like a candle. You just light the top, and it just keeps burning because there's ghee. It's like the fuel. So the cotton is there, and then the ghee is there coating the cotton, and it burns. So like giwik is very, very tight and tight cotton. So these verses are also packed, very, very compact instructions in how to live your life. So that when you chant Hare Krishna, you'll get to Krishna. You get the fullness of what's there in Krishna's holy name, which is Krishna. Krishna. Abhinatvam nama namino, the name of Krishna. And Krishna, the person, are not different. And you can't say that about something material. Classic example. water, 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 water. The sound and the object are different. I'll get more thirsty if I just say water, water, water. But I need to drink the water because the water substance, or the object and the name, are different. But in the realm of absolute, the name and the object are the same. So when you say Krishna, that sound, Krishna is literally dancing in your mouth. Literally. Not kind of. The sound of Krishna and Krishna are none different. And when that sound of Krishna enters into the ear, Krishna is entering into your ear. And that sound then goes to the courtyard of the heart, or the chamber of the heart, and it purifies the heart. Because Krishna is the Supreme Pure. So these instructions are very condensed instructions how to live your life in such a way you can reach Krishna, full realization of Krishna in this one short lifetime. Rupa Goswami wrote the book, and we're going to follow the commentary of great acharyas who have spoken about this wonderful little book. And we covered a number of verses kind of here and there. Well, in the previous visit, I covered verses 1 and 2. And I'll just quickly summarize 1 and 2. 1, the first verse of Nectar of Instruction, is describing the intermediate stage of devotion. There's the beginning, intermediate, advance. In the intermediate stage, because that's how we're being trained, we're very fortunate, we're being trained right away to come to the intermediate stage, where it's not just in the beginning stage. In all religions of the world, one thinks of God in the place of worship, in the church, synagogue, mosque, temple, whatever the name is, God is there. You probably, everybody, you know, whatever our background is, going to the church or going to the temple, and you're very reverential because God is there. And you say prayers and you worship God because He's there in the temple. And then you go outside the church or the temple, and, you know, it's back to normal. Let's go have lunch, or remember my father used to go play golf. You don't play golf inside the church. You play golf on the golf course. But you go to the church, you worship God, and then you go to the golf course and play golf. Because God's in the place of worship. But in the intermediate stage, there's seeing God and appreciating, making friends with the devotees, and then being kind and compassionate to innocent people who don't know about God so much, and then carefully don't get really close to people who are hardcore atheistic individuals. This is a standard of a middle stage. And so we do things. We go out of our way to extend the holy name and literature and prasadam and festivals and experience of God consciousness, experience of Krishna to one and all. It was really nice, this Rath Yatra festival. I missed being with you for one day, but it was really fun. Ratadvaja Maharaj, by surprise, came to the festival. And he had been there 3 years ago, and he described, because we were sitting taking prasadam together after, said, this is a much better location, because previously, when during Prabhupada's time in 19... When was it? 1971 and 72 and 73, or something like that. They had downtown Chicago, like on whatever it is, State Street or Madison. I think it was State Street, downtown Chicago. And I don't know for what reason, they moved from downtown Chicago to Devon Street. I guess because it was near the temple. And then we decided, well, it's nice on Devon Street, but where do we hold the festival at the end of the Devon Street? So we decided, let's have it in our neighborhood, and we'll have it down by the lake. And I don't know, it's gotten very attractive, because there were, well, just to give you an idea, there were two booths at the end of the parade lasts for about an hour and a half, and it was a very nice parade. And at the end, nice little festival, and during the festival they performed Jagannath Priya Natakam, which was King Indradumna. Long, long ago, you know, Satya Yuga, King Indradumna, who wanted to see God in his deity form, Nila Madhava, so it's a long story from Skanda Purana. And it was how the beginning of the establishing of Jagannath and the Jagannath temple in Jagannath Puri, and the details of Jagannath explaining to King Indradumna how he wanted to be worshipped, which is the very same way that they perform the worship today. Exactly according to those teachings. And even Ramanujacharya went there and tried to reform because it's not... Jagannath didn't want to be changed. So, nice drama on the stage. Really well attended. And one of the things I liked the most was there are a lot of people there that didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. New people. And so they had this side and over on that side, far ends, opposite ends of the festival site, they had a booth where people were engaged in chanting japa that had never chanted before. You want to guess how many people chanted japa that had never chanted japa before? One round of japa? 410 or 420 people. Very nice. Plus all the kirtan, all the prasadam, nice stage activity. So that's what madhyamas do, you know, the intermediate stage. We try to, you know, create situations that give people an opportunity to experience something about devotion to Krishna. And it's really fun. There's a lot of work, but it's really fun. And Krishna is pleased. And Lord Jagannath gives his mercy. So we do things like that. And then an Uttama is one who sees Krishna in everything, and everything in Krishna. And we can only imagine what that's like, because we're not there, we're down here. So the first verse is describing the upper stage of the Madhyama, where the lower tendencies, you know, animal tendencies, are checked. As long as we have a body, There are urges within the body, and the first verse is describing somebody who is so qualified. There's six urges: vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. These six urges are no longer affecting this person. So that's where it starts. That's the first verse. And then the second, we also discussed last time I was visiting here, or some time ago, six things that destroy bhakti. And then this verse is six things that enrich bhakti, or enhance. That's what we're going to talk about today. You know, these six things will help you, help any of us, to go further in spiritual progress. And that's what we're going to be discussing. Here is the verse. Upadesha Amrita is the Sanskrit. Nectar of instruction is how Prabhupada translated it. Amrita means nectar. And Upadesha, instruction. Nectar of instruction. So here's the first three. Utsaham nischayad dharyat. Tattat karma pravartanat. Sangha tyagat sato vrite. Shadbhir bhakti prasidhyati. So we'll break it down. We'll spend most of our time on this one. The laser pointer doesn't work on the screen. Utsahan, upper left, is enthusiasm. By enthusiasm. Nishchayat, by confidence, dhairyat, patience. So we'll talk about those three. Maybe we'll get to finish. There's 49 slides to this. I don't think we're going to finish. So here's the translation. There are six principles favorable to the execution of that devotional service that was described in the first verse. One, being enthusiastic. Two, endeavoring with confidence. Three, being patient. Four, acting according to regular principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. This is Prahlad Maharaj from the Bhagavatam. Practices of bhakti. Five, abandoning the association of non-devotees. And six, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure complete success. Bhakti prasidhyati. Prasidhyati. When it becomes perfect. Prasidhyati. When proceeds down that or advances to the stage of perfection. These six things. So, there's three attitudes and three actions. The attitudes are the first three. Enthusiasm, patience, conviction. And then there's actions. Tat-tat karma pravartanat. Following the regulations found in the scriptures. Sangatyagat, keeping away from unwholesome association. Satovrite. So, in the purport of the verse, Prabhupada explains devotional service itself, what it is and what it is not. So why does he start with that? Because if we don't know what bhakti is, how we know how to apply these principles to it? So the object, bhakti, is described. And he describes first what it isn't. It's not just a sentiment, like, I feel something. You feel something, but it's not just something that you feel. It's not imagination, either. It's practical activity. And in the language of Rupa Goswami, who's the author and follower of Lord Chaitanya, he uses a word that Prabhupada has translated as cultivation. Anushilana, for those of you that know Nectar of Devotion. Anu means to follow. And shilana means behavior or conduct. Anushilana. Cultivation, following the great souls. Cultivation. So I may be down here. That's okay. And perfection is way up here. That's okay. Those souls that show the path of perfection, let me cultivate. Anu, shilana. Practice. And then gradually practice makes perfect, right? If you're following the right souls, the right instructions, the good example, and staying away from unwholesome association, then one can achieve perfection. So, here's what devotional service is. It's pure. I just paraphrased it. See this word? Anushilana. Okay, anyway. Anyabhilashatu shunyam gyanakarma janavratam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. Bhakti is pure. Bhakti is uttama. Bhakti is uttama bhakti. And the teaching that we're getting is how to come to that uttama. Uttama is this one. The advanced, the topmost. Uttama, topmost. And bhakti is pure, it's topmost, and it's a cultivation of the activities of perfected souls. And accepting those things as our life, gradually incorporating those things within our life. Here's his translation. Uttama bhakti, or unalloyed devotion unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, involves the rendering of devotional service in a way that is favorable to the Lord. This devotional service should be free from any extraneous motive and devoid of fruitive karma, impersonal gyan, and all other selfish desires. So we're just still defining what devotional service is so we can get to things that enhance it. And I'll go through this quickly. According to Rupa Goswami, there are 26 primary characteristics of a devotee, or one who's practicing devotion. And there are marginal characteristics as well as principal characteristics, like intrinsic, always there. So here's the examples. Favorably serving Krishna has to be always present in what devotion is primary characteristic. And there's a cultivation of that. So I may be down here, but if I'm still trying to favorably serve Krishna, I may not be perfect, but I'm sincerely trying. That's a primary characteristic of devotional service. And Krishna is the object who I'm trying to render service to or offer my love to. And then there's these marginal characteristics. No other desire, free from fruitive activity, and so on. This is a nice painting, isn't it? This is Sandipani Muni. These two down here, that's Krishna and Balaram. You recognize them? They got the head shaved. Because when they went from Vrindavan, when Krishna was 12, he was taken by Akura from Vrindavan to Mathura, where he had a little encounter with Kamsa's wrestlers. You know that story? Yes? No. Kamsa was a wicked king. He was such a wicked king, he threw his father into prison. He threw his sister into prison, that's Devaki, and he ruled just by terror. He was like a terrorist. Only he was king. And he tried like anything to kill Krishna, but it didn't work. Because everyone he sent to kill Krishna worked the other way around. Although Krishna was just a little boy. So finally he got this plan, I'll bring Krishna here to the capital city and my elephant will kill him or my wrestlers will kill him and you know, we'll kill him. We'll just get our armies to kill him. Only it turned out the other way. Krishna killed Kamsa. And then at 12 years old, Krishna hadn't even gone to school yet. So when he was reunited with his mother and father, they said, hey, you have to go to school. So they enrolled him at the best teacher, Sandipani Muni, right there. So they, in according to the tradition, they entered the school of the guru, and they had their little heads shaved, and they learned everything from Sandipani Muni really fast, because actually Krishna already knows everything. He finished his entire education in 64 days. So here's the purport. One should be particularly careful to understand the truth about Krishna. If, because of laziness, one does not come to know Krishna conclusively, one will be misguided about the cult of devotion. Although the use of thoughts and arguments is a most suitable process for inducing an uninitiated person to become a devotee, neophytes in devotional service must, notice it's bright print, always alertedly understand Krishna through the vision of the revealed scriptures, the bona fide devotees, and the spiritual master. Unless one hears about Sri Krishna from such authorities, one cannot make advancement in devotion to Krishna. We're still talking about what is devotion or devotional service. And it's resting upon the authority of Scripture, just like Sandipani Muni teaching Krishna, or us learning from the Scripture. We need the Scripture and we need teachers of the Scripture to teach us. So that will help us advance in the path of devotion to Krishna. The revealed scriptures mention 9 means of attaining devotional service, of which the first and foremost is hearing from authority. The seed of devotion cannot sprout unless watered by the process of hearing and chanting. So we do a lot of that, a lot of watering. What the idea is, the Chicago Rath Yatra again. They had a meeting after the Rath Yatra to, like, you know, how did it go? A debriefing, they call it. It's a military term. So they decided one of the best parts, along with this, like, individuals chanting japa, was the kirtan. So next year, their thought is to have right in the center a nama yajna. Invite, you know, this kirtan singer and that kirtan singer and another kirtan singer and another kirtan singer and just, like, lots of kirtan. And then, you know, this stage over there and, you know, different things, but, like, the center is the holy name. I said, you better get a guess from these people way ahead of time, because it may not be so easy to get, you know, what you want. But that's their idea. And then, of course, displays that all have Prabhupada's books that can help the people who begin their chanting get that wonderful experience, public experience of Nama Yajna, to go further in their spiritual life. But hearing is the beginning. Hearing and chanting. Here's a nice statement from Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj, its author. A sincere student should not neglect the discussion of such conclusions, considering them controversial, for such discussions strengthen the mind. Thus one's mind becomes attached to Krishna. This is a lot of text. You know, this is prepared for a group of students who once a week get on a call and study Nectar of Instruction. And this is, that's where I got this from. Prema Tarangani is teaching these devotional texts. So she very kindly loaned these to me. And this is maybe like a lot of information. So are you okay with a lot of information? Because we didn't even get to the 6 yet. We're still on what is bhakti. It's okay. Tell me if you're getting, like, you know, let's move on or something. Okay. This is taken from Lord Chaitanya's instructions to, let's get back to you two. Something about Rupa Goswami. Remember, Rupa Goswami is a student of, a follower of Lord Chaitanya. Rupa Goswami had an elder brother whose name was Sanatan Goswami. A little background, little relief from so much information. They were born, actually their ancestry was from South India. And over a number of 5 or 6 generations, they had migrated to the north of India. And when they were young, they were in Saraswat Brahmin families, family, and the ruler of the time, I believe he was a Turk. He wasn't a nice guy. He gave... He gave Rupa and Sanatan a choice. You're very popular with your Brahminical group of people, your devotee group of people. Here's your choice. You can either assist me in my government and help me rule the government, or I'll torture everybody that's in your Brahminical community. Think about it. Let me know what you want to do. They didn't want to do either one. They didn't want to work for that guy. But they didn't want to torture everybody either. So they became ministers in his government. At that time, they were prime minister, finance minister, and their third brother was the home minister for about a third of what is India today. They were up there as far as their capacity. They had no interest in it at all. Their real interest was in devotion. So when they came to know of Lord Chaitanya, who was a contemporary, they gradually, you know, snuck out the back door. They left their government post. And they went from, like, you know, the prime minister to live in Vrindavan in just one cloth, a loincloth, living under different trees every night. Living by Madhukari, just accepting whatever. It's like simple life. But their thinking was very high, while the life was very simple. So Sanatana Goswami, during one time when he met with Lord Chaitanya in Prayag, at the Shashvamedha Ghat in Prayag, Lord Chaitanya was instructing him. And this is one of his instructions. A person who is expert in understanding the conclusion of the revealed scriptures and who fully surrenders to the cause of the Lord is actually able to deliver others from the clutches of material existence. Emphasis on surrender as well as understanding the teachings, how to get to that position. Similarly, Rupa Goswami teaches in this very verse that to make rapid advancement in devotional service, one should be very active and should persevere in executing the duties specified of the revealed scriptures and confirmed by the spiritual master. There's a little repetition so that it's clearly understood. Guided by scriptures, one can practice devotion very nicely. Without guidance of scripture, it's a disturbance to society. I'm paraphrasing a teaching of Rupa Goswami. Imitation devotees who wish to advertise themselves as elevated Vaishnavas and who therefore imitate the previous acharyas but do not follow them in principle are condemned, in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, as stone-hearted. The desired change of heart referred to above is visible in the reluctance to do anything that is not congenial to the devotional way. That was verse number 2. Now this is things that are favorable. To create such a change of heart, conclusive discussion about Sri Krishna and his potencies is absolutely necessary. I'm going to skip this. It's saying the same thing from a different source. So now we introduce devotional service, and these are six factors, or the first three attitudes that help advance devotional service. Enthusiasm that's based on scriptural teaching. Very important. These are little statements from the purport. Without enthusiasm, one cannot be successful. Prabhupada explains you can't be successful even in material things. Without enthusiasm, can you be successful in material things? So certainly, it applies in spiritual things. Enthusiasm isn't just like, you know, you jump up and down. You perform practical activity. Nice quote, I like this very much. Endeavor, executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness, is called enthusiasm. I'll say it a couple of times because it's a good one to remember. What is enthusiasm? Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Or properly guided, in other words. Endeavoring with proper intelligence. The devotee finds the correct means by which everything can be utilized in the service of the Lord. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Uchite. These are teachings of Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion. Okay, here's Ralph Waldo Emerson. Enthusiasm is the mother of effort and without it nothing great was ever achieved. Same point. There's a number of other authorities that are saying the same thing that Scripture says. So what is definition? We already have one definition. Endeavor with proper intelligence. Here's the breakdown of the etymology of the word. A-N and theos, enthusiasm, in God, or divine inspiration, something that's within, and you feel a calling or inspired from within, to be rapt or in ecstasy, be eager. And it means the mind is also very focused when you're enthusiastic for something. When you're not enthusiastic for something, blah. But when you're enthusiastic, you're very attentive. I was visiting one family somewhere in the United States, and the family had moved from one place to another place because they had bought a house to have their son enrolled in a school that was renowned, had a reputation of being a really good school. But he didn't like it because the kids were all snobby. They were rich kids. They were just into, in this first couple of grades of school, fashion, comparing what clothes you wear. And, he didn't like it at all. So they went to another school that was different, but also had a good reputation. So I asked him, how do you like it, this new school? He says, I like it much better. What do you like about it? It's much more time for playing. Yeah, it's very enthusiastic. In order to be enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness, one has to know its value. If one is given a jewel but doesn't know its value, one will not be very enthusiastic about it. The Shamantaka jewel? What did Jambavan do with the jewel? He gave it to his child to play with. A big thing over a lot of people over that jewel, but Jambavan, Krishna came and received the jewel from Jambavan and gave it back to Satrajit. Here, you keep it. And Satrajit, someone killed him to get the jewel. Anyway, the jewel of Krishna consciousness, or the jewel of devotion to Krishna, one may not be enthusiastic about it unless you understand what it is, its value. Therefore, it is a fact that the more one advances in Krishna conscious knowledge, the more enthusiastic he becomes. Now, this is taken directly from a lecture that Srila Prabhupada spoke about. Somehow he changed this, but it didn't stick. Anyway, on the path of Krishna consciousness, the first principle is enthusiasm. If you lack enthusiasm, then other things will not take place. You can keep your enthusiasm if you follow the rules and regulations and chant the Hare Krishna mantra regularly. Otherwise, that enthusiasm will dry up. I was hearing a lecture, in Los Angeles. Prabhupada wanted to establish Krishna consciousness under the order of his spiritual master in the English-speaking parts of the world. So he did a lot of translating in Hawaii because the weather was very nice and, wasn't too this and too that. So there's a nice room in the Hawaii temple. Maybe someday. I went there once to visit a friend, Vatsal Prabhu, who was the president there. And you just walk in the room and you feel, wow. You can feel Prabhupada's presence just walking in the room. Because he spent more time in that room translating than any other place on the planet. He liked the weather, and it was a very quiet neighborhood, very peaceful. But he spent more time in Los Angeles as his, like, headquarters. So it was his study and then his headquarters in Los Angeles. So he trained the pujaris, and he trained the administrator, and he trained the sankirtan, so he asked the devotees come there to get training, how to do things very nicely. So one of the things that he did while staying in Los Angeles is he took the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita and had devotees read verse and then purport, and in intervals he would interrupt and then say, you know, this, explain the meaning. It's a very nice series. Topmost Yoga, I think it was called, there it was recorded and released. And one phrase I remember very distinctly, Prabhupada, because the sixth chapter is dhyan, yoga, meditation, fixing the mind. And during one part of that, he was describing the word dhira. D-H-I-R-A, dhira. So dhira means undisturbed or sober. The mind doesn't move. This or that, the mind stays in one place, very fixed. And then Prabhupada asked the question, how does one become dhira? And then he answered, by voluntarily accepting austerities, by controlling the senses. Voluntarily, one becomes dhira. Just like a short while ago, we observed Nirjal Ekadasi, and we do it once a year. Nirjal Ekadasi. And then after Nirjal Ekadasi, many devotees think, wow, it was so nice. Maybe I should, like, increase my Ekadasi vow. And it lasts maybe for one or two or three Ekadasis, and then kind of fizzles. But it helps one's determination. And the mind staying, doesn't matter whether it's hot or cold or wet or dry or honor, dishonor, or pleasure, pain, or the mind stays fixed in Krishna. So, by following rules and regulations and chanting Hare Krishna, similarly, your enthusiastic steadiness can be facilitated. So that, I'm going to skip this because of... And it's another lecture where he's just elaborating. Enthusiasm and patience. By patience, not that I am working so hard for Krishna, but I'm not getting any impetus. No, don't be impatient. Krishna will give you chance. He's giving chance always, 24 hours, imperceptibly, but we cannot appreciate very much. Krishna sees. As far as we are able, according to our strength, he gives responsibility, but we must be rest assured, when we have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna fully, without any reservation, Krishna must be pleased. Maybe it will take some time. That is called nishchayat, certainty, assurance. Utsahan, dhyayat, nishchayat. So he's just going through the verse, breaking it down. Here's something about enthusiasm from our worldly scholars. Victor Hugo said, enthusiasm is the fever of reason. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Enthusiasm is the height of a man, the passing from the human to the divine, which is very much like the root of the Latin meaning. Enthusiasm is the best thing derived from history. Pasteur. Enthusiasm is the contemplation of the inner God. Pretty close. Enthusiasm is the invisible, inward intensity of being. Again, it's very much the root meaning of the word. The ones who accomplish the most and are the happiest are the ones who embrace and develop enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is that feeling within that inspires and prompts one to act without thought of reward. Very nice definition. here's something that very closely matches what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about enthusiasm. Really simple. And it's similar to a topic that verses in Bhagavatam I've been reading from directly address also. Listen, it's simple. One cannot sustain enthusiasm without a spiritual conception of life. So, enthusiasm that's built on passion doesn't sustain. Enthusiasm that's based upon goodness sustains. Enthusiasm that's based on the conception of the soul is unshakable. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches, therefore, one should definitely strive for a spiritual conception of life so that, as we heard earlier, the more that we have a deeper understanding of this valuable gift that we've been giving, it's real easy to be enthusiastic. It's just natural to be enthusiastic. It's one of the things that makes giving Krishna consciousness to others so wonderful. Like if you have this really, really wonderful thing, you want to share with other people. It's just natural. Just natural. As like one of the principal characteristics of the saintly person is they look kindly towards others. We're discussing in the Bhagavatam verses. They're kindly disposed towards others, compassion towards others. What's a selfish saintly person? They don't go together. A saintly person is compassionate. They're naturally inclined to think of others. The section that we're reading in the Bhagavatam is the sages, or the learned persons, who saw this wicked King Vena taunting and doing horrific things to everybody, including them. So they considered, you know, we're responsible. We put him in this position. And the citizens are being tortured. We're being harassed. And he's making everybody's life miserable. We're brahmanas. What are we supposed to do? Because they have compassion for others, they had to do something. And you look around the world and see, yikes, what a mess. You have to do something. What can you do? You're just one little person, one little guy, or one little kid. Like, wow, what a mess. What to do? So there's guidance that comes, there's light that comes from spiritual teachings, and one who firmly takes shelter of those enthusiastically feel, if you feel something and you enthusiastically wish to act for the benefit of others without consideration of, oh, I'm going to get something for this. Passion is not the motivation anymore. It's goodness. It's doing good for others. And being very enthusiastic to do good for others. That's enthusiasm in goodness. And with a spiritual conception, it's endless. It's eternal. Here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he made a commentary on this. We're not getting very far. We're still on enthusiasm. That's like one out of six. I'll have to continue this tomorrow. But see when we finish with the first one of the six. Maybe. He quotes a verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith and not be deviated from the path. This is enthusiasm. One should not become negligent at any... It's the nature of passion. You do something for a little spurt because you're moved to get something, and when you get the something, then you don't do it anymore. Or you got the something, it didn't satisfy, so you don't do it anymore. that's when one is ruled by passion. But with this transcendental enthusiasm, there's no negligence. Negligence is born out of, he indicates, there's three. The opposite of enthusiasm is to be negligent. And he says there's three. One is it's in gradations. The lowest is doing nothing. Inactivity. Apathy is you do something, but you really just don't care. You're just like careless and sloppy and, you know, what parents don't want to see their kids do in school. You know, that one. Parents know what I'm talking about. And then there's distraction, where, you know, you're doing, but your attention isn't fully absorbed. Enthusiasm is the mind is absorbed. Everything is absorbed. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching. And devotion applies in the same way. So there's regulations that help us overcome, like, you know, where we want to be and where we are, and you need enthusiasm to get there. We should not lose enthusiasm because we have no strength to destroy the reactions of karma. In the very beginning of devotional service, the sadhaka must have faith with full enthusiasm. Meaning, not imagined, but sentiment, but full confidence that Krishna will carry you from where you are to where you want to go. And that enthusiasm, that conviction with intelligence, endeavoring with intelligence, carries you to the goal. One more. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur similarly describes, you should say, faith or confidence. With faith, one should learn devotional service under the merciful direction of a sadhu. And when he attains the stage of firm faith, he engages in nishtha, fixed devotional service. Until he attains his fixed devotional service, his service remains unsteady bhakti. So this is six categories. They're very nice, and I'm not going to discuss them because it's... Here's another idea of enthusiasm, where if you see, as scripture teaches us, that everything belongs to Krishna, since everything belongs to Krishna, when we don't see the Krishna connection, our enthusiasm for devotional service diminishes. Just like, there was a time when I was determined, I'm not going to get a computer. So people wrote letters, and I, instead of answering letters, I got a little micro cassette recorder and gave it to a secretary to transcribe the letters because I didn't want to type. I was going to, like, you know, not do that. And some time passed, and some time passed, and I started seeing there's lots of things you can do with computers that I can't just get somebody else to make a PowerPoint presentation for me. I know what I want to say, and so I got a computer. And then, you know, cell phones came out. And I can get a cell phone. Anyway. At least for a devotee, seeing the connection of things with Krishna and Krishna's service, then there's some reason for having some contact with that something. And if it's not clear what the service to Krishna is, at least for a devotee, I'm not interested. But if there's some service for Krishna, then I'm interested. I'll just share one other little, just to keep the anecdotal side, keeping everyone's attention here. Again, the Chicago Rath Yatra. So, once upon a time, I became an officer of our society. It's called a governing body commissioner. There's 33 of us throughout the whole world that oversee places, geographic areas. So part of the reason you see me so much is this is part of my responsibility, the Midwest. the temples in the Midwest USA, and also in New York, New Jersey, Northeast. I have to have that responsibility. So, along with at least 33, then there's, you know, in rotation, different persons become officers of the 33. So I became an officer after some years of successfully avoiding. I became an officer, and then gradually I became like the chairman of the GBC. And nobody ever taught me what you're supposed to do as a chairman of the GBC. Not a clue. But I learned from a couple of people that had been chairman before, you know, something like this and something like that. So I thought, okay, chairman. What's a chairman of the GBC supposed to do? You're supposed to think about the world. Not just like your area, but the world. Okay. What's important in the world? So one of the places important in the world is China. Hey. China. Right. Let's do a little research on China. At least the statistics that I've come across, a quarter of the world's population is in China. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was given that assignment by Srila Prabhupada directly to start the China mission. And then after some time, he left his body. And then there was an assistant, GBC, whose health, Giridhari Swami, was such he couldn't function as a GBC. He was taking care of his health. And then there was a third who was from Australia, married to a Chinese girl, and he was blacklisted, as you call it in India. The government kicked him out. He can't get a visa to come in the country. So there's a quarter of the world's population without somebody in the GBC position visiting them. So I thought, gee, I should go visit China and tell them, you guys are important. So that's what I did. I visited them, and what I saw was, whew. Besides, the people are really nice. There's a gazillion people. There's so many people, and I'm from New York, and I, you know, just going anywhere. It's like rush hour heading for the subway all day long. There's so many people. And the devotees are really... So I thought I should spend some more time after I was the chairman. So I've been going to visit in China. And then visiting in China without too many details, because you're not supposed to talk about what happens there because of the government thing. So I saw, you know, they don't have much access to contact young, intelligent people in China because of the government thing. So, but there's a lot of Chinese students coming to America. I don't know if you've noticed, but the numbers are increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. How about you guys in your school? How many, the number of Chinese students in your school? Some. I've done some research in colleges. Average is about 10%, and it goes higher. Like big, you know, the 40,000, 50,000 student population, 10% of them are Chinese. Demographics are going to change. And what to speak of places in California, UCLA. Go to the UCLA campus. Maybe you'll see a few Americans. A few Indians, non-resident Indian students, and the rest are Chinese. It's Japanese, I guess, but, you know, whew. And all up and down the coast like that, USC, and content is changing. So I thought, okay, I'm going to spend a little less time in China, a little more time in colleges in the U.S. meeting Chinese students, because a lot of them want to go back to their country because they're very patriotic and they want to help their country in whatever the field is. So without too many details, I've been spending this last two semesters of college spending time specifically visiting places where I know they have ongoing programs, looking to see where there are Chinese students. And a few persons picked up on, I'm interested in doing that. And so at the Chicago Rath Yatra, I met a Chinese woman. Her husband was out of the country. She's from Singapore. And she's just a natural devotee. And so they're going to meet, you know, her husband knows some different cultural organizations made up of primarily Chinese people. So some of the brahmacharis are going to go there with kirtan and prasadam and watch the magic happen. It'll happen. Because they're wonderful people. And then they'll help us, I'm sure some of those people will help us with the college students that are Chinese speaking, and it's really fun. Although that's just one little pocket of the possibilities. It's a growing pocket. So to see the world in which we live as Krishna's. And, you know, there's other people that think differently that it's Krishna's. They think it's someone else's. But it's actually Krishna's, and if we have that conviction, we can be, you know, very calm, but at the same time very enthusiastic to see, you know, how Krishna's will can enter into the lives of people who think otherwise. It's nice. Krishna consciousness is nice. So I think this is going to be our last slide. This word anartas is the opposite of artha. It's anartha. You know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha? Everybody knows that one. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. People engage in religiosity in order to get economic prosperity, which can then be utilized for enjoying material life and this life and the next life in heaven, right? Dharma, artha, kama, and then someday moksha, the fourfold purposes of the Vedas. The word artha literally means something that's wanted, that which is desired or desirable. Most people want money. So artha means economic development. So you get money so you can have sense gratification. And the front end, if you do religious things, that's fine. So we can get the artha and we get the kama. Commonly. All over the world. Not any particular part of the world. Common. Prosper in this life and the next life from pious religious activity. The actual meaning is something that's wanted or desirable, and then anartha is undesirable. So there are things in the heart that are, in the Sanskrit term, called anarthas, like impurities of heart, anartha. So all unwanted things of the heart are vanquished by performing devotional service with enthusiasm. And once again, to sustain it, there must be a spiritual conception. So enthusiasm is the only support for all types of devotional service. By enthusiastically performing devotional service, one can give up anishtata. What's unsteady? That's what that word means. Nishta and anishtata. Steady and unsteady. All unsteady service in a very short time, and thus attain steadiness. Enthusiasm is the life of faith. Faith without enthusiasm is meaningless. So we're going to end there. Yay, we covered one of six. Any discussion? Suja, yes.
Maharaj, you said the enthusiasm on basis of spiritual consumption can be sustained if it is built on the mode of goodness.
No, I didn't exactly say that. Let's do it again. There's enthusiasm and passion that says, I want something, so I'm enthusiastic to get that something. If I get the something, my enthusiasm diminishes. Excuse me, if I don't get that something, my enthusiasm, I feel frustrated. And if I get the something, it doesn't satisfy the way that I thought it would satisfy, and then enthusiasm wanes. So enthusiasm in goodness, you can continue to be enthusiastic in goodness because the motivation in goodness is, this will purify me. And the person of goodness is always wishing to become more purified, more purified, more purified. So you can sustain because its mode of goodness is, it maintains. Then I said, in contrast, or supported by the mode of goodness is, in spiritual conception, it's eternal. Enthusiasm is ever increasing on a spiritual conception. Because in the spiritual conception, I'm getting closer or more intimately connected with Krishna. And that experience of being intimately connected with Krishna is so enlivening to the soul. There's nothing that can stop it. Even like the gopis, they can't check themselves. Yeah.
So my question is,
yeah,
how to sustain that enthusiasm? Because I feel,
how to sustain the enthusiasm, mode of goodness, and spiritual conception.
Because I feel like the parameters of my energy, my enthusiasm, and my capabilities are like limited.
Sure.
So with that limited thing, like,
oh, yes, you do. Krishna. It's nice to realize that you're limited. We had this discussion just yesterday, didn't we? About, you know, it was your question. Huh? What was it? Wasn't it last night?
Yes.
Yes, that's last night. About realizing, you know, the quality of chanting, I try and try, and it's not becoming quality chanting. Krishna, so we're on our own effort, it's not sufficient. Remember that? So same. I'm dependent. At last, I realize I'm not independent. I'm dependent. It's nice. Now what do you do when you realize you're dependent? You act in dependence. You let go of the independence and let go and take shelter of dependence. Of the supreme independent. He's very loving. That's how you do. That's the next step.
Even in order to act for that, we need input.
You need? Okay. One can feel oneself dependent and be enthusiastic at the same time. It's not, oh, I'm dependent. I lost my enthusiasm. It's another kind of enthusiasm. It's a different kind than the other kind. It's a loving kind, not an independent kind. It's nice. Yes, you need enthusiasm for that. And it's a natural enthusiasm. It's a sustainable enthusiasm. You never get tired. Oh, I don't have enthusiasm. I'm bored. I'm getting close to Krishna. Now I'm bored. No. Or, there's this separation between myself and Krishna. You never become discouraged. You're just ever increasing. That's the nature of the spiritual realm, the spiritual energy. Keep going. In a fully dependent mode. And it's nice. And Krishna is very kind. always. Krishna is very kind. Yes?
Maharaj, if you define definition, endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness and enthusiasm. So we see in past also, in Prabhupada time, a lot of devotees joined the movement and then they left. So what is the specific use of intelligence, or like how to understand that in this context?
I'm trying to understand the connection of the example you gave with the question you're asking. So let me just like process it for a moment. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes four types of pious people that render service unto him. I want, or I want, or I want, or I want. Different categories of I want. Either, as discussed before, twice now, the third time, is inspired by passion. I want and I get. See you later, Krishna. I want and I don't get. See you later, Krishna. So something has to replace that I want, and that is, it's my constitutional position, it's who I am, to be in service to Krishna. At some point, that you have to change from the first horse to the second horse. So that's intelligence. Endeavoring with intelligence. Buddhi, dadami, buddhi yogam tam. Or from the 241 Bhagavad Gita. Vyavasayatnika buddhi. Krishna gives that buddhi to one who is constantly devoted to him. So it's not just, I want, I want, I want, see you later. It's constantly devoted to him. So the motivation that was like emphasized in these verses, the motivation needs to become not what's in it for me, but it's my position to be Krishna's servant. And I like being Krishna's servant. That's intelligence. That's buddhi. And it pervades everything. Whether it's even things I don't like, I like. Meaning, I may not like to something, something. May not like to get up early in the morning. I may not like to wash pots. I may not like, you know, when it gets cold out. I may not like something or something. But because it's for service to Krishna, I like. And my enthusiasm is there regardless of duality. It's not created by the circumstance or destroyed by the circumstance. It's not circumstantial. It's intrinsic. That's intelligence. Yeah? Okay. Yes?
Sometimes, you know, we are living in the association of devotees in the community. We're doing service together.
Yes.
We may be enthusiastically doing services, but then when there is so much more and more, or services come upon somebody,
okay,
then you know, then I feel like, you know, there's a limitation of,
sure,
individual people.
That's okay.
To do and
that's okay. We all have our limitation, and so that doesn't mean enthusiasm gets crushed. It's just, you know, I can give an enthusiastic, I think I've reached my limit, Prabhu. I know that one. And that's okay. But even in that circumstance, we may think another qualified person who may also be able to do that service. And that's part of our enthusiasm too. Do you want to achieve that something? Okay. Yes.
Is it something I want to share? Whether it's what kind of people, the materialistic enthusiastic, the spiritualistic enthusiastic, from the bottom to top, it is like active materialist, he's very enthusiastic in the material things. He wants to do so many things in the material.
Okay.
So he was very fast to help. Like in the south sand, somebody is very active, he seems very fast. The other one is, the top one is the lazy materialist. They don't do anything, they are lazy material things. They don't want to do anything, they don't want to go to the job, nothing. So it is like they don't do anything in the south sand, but still they seem. The other one is lazy transcendentalist, or lazy Krishna conscious person.
If I want
to do
is
lazy
in everything. That's not Krishna consciousness. it's active. It's what our acharyas are saying, it's active. So a Krishna conscious lazy person doesn't, it's a contradiction. Are you doing this lazy, intelligent, active, intelligent, that thing? Okay. Okay. That example, the Brahmana is the lazy intelligent. The Kshatriya is the active intelligent. And then, like Prabhupada used to complain, Pradyumna, you're too lazy.
Very active.
Yes. But he like the section that we're reading in the Bhagavatam where the Brahmanas came down to the platform of, you know, taking action to correct the situation they had created, and then they went back to the Brahminical position. Because Brahmanas don't normally get involved in government or politics. But they did because of they had created that situation. Remember that part of the morning discussion? You have something? Yes, Karti.
Maharaj, this is regarding your interaction with the Chinese.
Yeah.
And do they accept Lord Buddha as an avatar of Krishna? Or
they don't have a clue. When we tell them Buddha is an avatar of Krishna, they go, oh. So then that helps them have some interest in Krishna. So I've, with a little help from others, not more than a little, others have created three different PowerPoint presentations which I meant to share with you. Buddha and Krishna. So it's interesting, you know, and then from their conception, start with what they know about Buddha, and, you know, then there's different Buddhas, and there's all kinds of, you know, the land of Buddha and stuff like that. And then there's the land of Krishna. And it's an interesting, when I told this to this Chinese woman Sunday, she went, ooh. That would be very nice. I'd like to see this. So, yeah, they don't have an understanding of the connection of Buddha and Krishna for sure. But once they know there is some connection, they like to know clearly what the connection is. And then there's teachings of Buddha, and teachings of the Vedas, and where is there similarity, where is there dissimilarity. Yes, Anju.
I am wondering, like, if a bucket full of misconceptions...
If one has a bucket full of misconceptions, is that what you said?
Yeah, before understanding the importance of jewel, you know, important of Krishna consciousness, if our bucket got full with misconceptions, it seems like chaos, so what to do?
Yeah, well, that's like most of us. Don't consider yourself to be have exclusive rights to that one. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, nice verse, just as the wind carries different aromas, so similarly the mind carries different conceptions of the self. And each of us has a mind, and each of us has, our mind has been exposed to something, and according to that exposure to the something, we're carrying some conceptions. A whole variety of them. Each of us, just like the air, carries aromas. The mind is carrying conceptions. So then we come in contact with that which is guaranteed not identical with what we already have as a conception. There may be some similarities and some differences, but for all of us, there's differences. And then, as you say, it's a mess. But you know, it depends on you know, our willingness to hear. Not like just close our eyes and believe in something kind of thing, but hear. You know, attentively. And then this is how the process works. Besides that sound vibration, if it's pure, or when it is pure, it cleanses. But then there's something, as it cleanses, there's something that resonates, that goes, ooh, that resonates. So then the next step is, you apply that something. And when you, according to what Prabhupada writes, and our experience also, when you act in knowledge, you get some realization. And when you get some realization, you go, ooh, that was nice. Then you go back to the source where you heard from, and you hear again. Now with a little more realization, and a little more faith, and you hear again. And not everything comes in, and but you know, there's something enters, and you go, "Oh, that's interesting. Let me apply it." So by acting in knowledge, our faith, our realizations grow, and our faith grows naturally. And that way, you know, the bucket full of misconceptions gradually gets reduced. And you know, for someone, it can be more gradual, someone more quick, and it's not a big deal because it's just however long it takes. That's how long it takes. But if we stay with the process of hearing, it acts. The conceptions, I've got this conception about whatever it is, and I hold it up to the light of the Vedas, and wow. I like, you know, it doesn't hold. It's not, let me put that one over here. Let's go with this one. And little by little, like that. That's the process. For all of us. Yes.
I have a couple questions.
Okay.
In the beginning, you were describing that Krishna's name is non-different than Krishna himself, and Krishna's dancing on the tongue. Is that true even at mind stage?
Yes. Why not? Do you have a why not? Okay. What else?
Secondly, the difference between over-enthusiasm and proper guided enthusiasm. I've always thought of over-enthusiasm as when my hearing and chanting, my core sadhana practice will get affected. I'm endeavoring beyond my capacity.
Uh-huh.
But I also come to the realization that as there is more hearing and chanting over the years, that Krishna expands capacity.
Yes.
And so, you know, enthusiasm is an ever-expanding...
Yes. Yes. The potency of Krishna comes through. It's like, this isn't a scriptural example, but I've heard this example given. You know, there's electricity running through this house. Supposing you have a 40 watt bulb, a 60 watt bulb, an 80 watt bulb, a 100 watt bulb, a 120 watt bulb, and same electricity running through the house. So according to the capacity, there's more illumination or less illumination. But it's the same electricity running through the house. So Krishna's mercy is unlimited, and our capacity is what's limited. So we act according to our capacity. And we receive from Krishna, and he uses us as his instrument. And as you say, it's true, then the capacity may increase by Krishna's kindness, and then the mercy that you receive and your enthusiasm to do things, guided with intelligence, can also increase. But the beginning part was very nicely stated. Over endeavor is when it negatively impacts our core activities of hearing and chanting, and we shouldn't let that happen. That's something to be cautious about. So, like, the big rocks go in first, and that creates enthusiasm, and then you do other things, but don't let that they're doing other things displace the core activities. Yes.
When persons like you come and visit and then can feel in the community individually, the enthusiasm level goes up. But then after, you kind of maintain it. So
what to do? I've got a big suitcase. Hear with faith. Here's something that those of us that are disciples of Srila Prabhupada and continuing on enthusiastically must still have some fuel in our tank to keep us going. And it's not by physical association with Prabhupada. Certainly being in Prabhupada's physical association was wonderfully enlivening. It kept our movement going. It's just his association was so powerful. But it's still going on, including those of us that are his disciples, that our main source of enthusiasm was him. So there's still that enthusiasm is continuing because there's still continuing contact. And certainly in part it's we've given our heart to him, but there's nothing else left in our life but serving him. But it's continuing to hear from him. I just had a discussion today with Giriraj Maharaj. You know him. What a wonderful association. Just, half hour, 40 minutes, and I'm good for another week. At least. But, we were discussing what inspires different devotees that we're associating with and what inspires us, and we were talking about Srimad Bhagavatam, and there's such a wealth of inspiration from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we just ended up like 20 minutes of talking about it's so because Prabhupada gave himself. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam in the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. It's chapter 2 of canto 10. Very nice verse that says great souls before they leave this world they leave behind them a boat by which one can cross the ocean of material existence. They do this out of their compassion. It's just their nature. And Srila Prabhupada was preparing and preparing and preparing to give his association to others for that time when he would no longer be with us. And that's his literatures. He gave his association for some devotees. I mean, I know some of Prabhupada's disciples that never even once were in his physical presence. It was only his books and hearing about him from those that had been with him and that kind of thing. Now, we didn't have the extensive media that you all have today with all of these memory things and following Srila Prabhupada, and we didn't have all that. It was just like, you know, little and little. But that was like zoom, zoom, zoom. And now you all have all of that technology, videos and audios and transcriptions and recordings, and you can associate in his books, and so you can associate with him and associate with one another, where it's just like that, the Bhagavatam installation. It was purposeful to, you know, to have everybody read a paragraph. And now, and you know, it was a story that everybody knows, but the enrichment that one feels from that experience is so nice. And besides, I was just following what Vaisheshika Prabhu does. And it's a way that we can get enthusiasm by receiving those same teachings and discussing them with one another, directly from the Bhagavatam or other media of Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness. Go back, you know, these recordings are being made. Go back and listen to the recordings, and then, you know, the things same as the response to Anju about getting rid of the bucket full of misconceptions. Hear something and then apply that something and you get a realization, and it goes, ooh. There's so much stuff. It's hard to unpack it all. There's so much stuff. So, but you just take something, like you picked up on this with this nice translation, or the definition of enthusiasm is endeavor with intelligence and Krishna consciousness. Nice. Then I can be enthusiastic by that standard. Well, I'm not really always at that standard, so how can I come to that standard? It's like, apply something and you're enthusiastic. And you feel the connection with the person who was sharing that. In this case, you know, it's a Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so on. That's how it's sustained. That's how those of us that are disciples of Prabhupada are sustaining our enthusiasm. That same, very same way. And it's a thrill. It's fun. It gives life. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.